Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, May 13th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by the great folks over at Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, technology you can trust. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So glad you could make it this Monday morning. We've got a great show lined up for you today. In fact, I was looking over the schedule, posted it yesterday. All week, we've got wonderful, wonderful programming for all of our listeners, and we thank you for tuning in. Who are our listeners? There are thousands of you that listen to the show, both live and to the podcast. So again, a shout out to the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show. Hey, keep the rubber on the road and be safe out there. All the homeschoolers, yep, we love you. We're homeschoolers too. So, hey, thank you for incorporating this show into your curriculum every single day. Thanks to, again, the folks that listen to us on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and always on BlogTalkRadio.com, including the podcast. Thanks to all the chat room chickeneers that join us live in the chat room that your IT department allows to open up if you happen to be at work. Some of you can't, but that's okay. We're glad that you can join us. And, of course, especially all of the feed and seed stores across this great land that stream this radio show live every day at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or if you're on the, say, the West Coast, 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Thank you very much for streaming it live for your customers. Hope business is booming for you. So, great programming all week long. Let's just go over it here real quick. Today, we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. We have an absolutely awesome topic I'll tell you about here in just a second. Tomorrow, we've got the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Jeanette Behringer is going to be coming on tomorrow. This Wednesday, it's Garden Wise Living with Arlena. She'll be telling us what wine she's picked out for Wednesday, and of course, a Garden Wise Living topic about year-round gardening, no matter where you live. This Thursday, the 16th, we've got Dr. McRae, a poultry scientist and professor, coming up here on Thursday, and then Friday there will be no show, so a chock-full educational week this week here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Every day it's going to be awesome, and Wednesday I might have to check out a little bit early, but I'll either leave you with Arlena or just end the show a little bit early. We have to get up, we've got about an hour's drive to get to the doctor where he can take out the stitches in Lily's ear from the surgery. It's healing very nicely, and we look forward to getting that. I know she's looking forward to getting those stitches out on Wednesday, so got to love it. So great, great week this week. Hope you can tune in each and every day. Like I said, today's topic, it's a humdinger. Let me tell you, if you follow us on Facebook, then you've already seen today's topic with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Of course, pardon me, it is, here's the title, it's kind of lengthy, but just to give you an idea of what we're talking about today, the importance of good gut health, starting with the development of the intestinal tract from the embryo to adult, discussing such things as probiotics, feeding and the feeding and the immune system as it relates to the intestinal tract. Okay, you do not want to miss this show. I'm telling you what. So get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. You know those spiral notebooks you got with the big CW on it. I'm taking all those notes from all the experts we have on our radio show, learning more about our backyard chicken. So today's going to be a great show. Get those pen and paper ready. You know you love it when Peter Brown comes on the radio show. How about that? So hope you had a wonderful weekend with family and friends. Hope it was just a blessed weekend. We had some really wonderful weather on Saturday. I got a few things done here around the homestead, and then we were invited to a good old-fashioned fish fry. Yes, all the fish were caught in the ponds right behind my house. In fact, I can see them right out the window here, and they're my neighbor's ponds. He's got about 10 acres right behind us, and he lives maybe another 100 feet up the road from that. But yeah, it was great. We had of course those homemade hush puppies and the fish fry. We had bass and catfish and brim and crappie, and then of course the homemade coleslaw and potato salad. Our friend Kay up the road, she brought two homemade chocolate pies that were to die for. There was homemade banana pudding, used the recipe from I don't know, what's that gal down in Savannah that's got that show who always likes butter? I forget her name. Anyway, because I don't own a television. Anyway, she's got the kind of the white hair, southern, everything has butter in it. She probably puts a stick of butter between two Krispy Kreme donuts and eats it. What's her name? Anyway, y'all remind me of the chat room. Anyway, banana pudding from that. It was a fun time. We had a great time. That was on Saturday. And then yesterday we got a little running around doing, got some things for... Got a few things for Caleb's birthday. Yeah, some plates and napkins and forks and cups and a couple of presents and tablecloths and some balloons and banners and things like that. But the majority of the decorations, Jen, being the creative mom she is making actually a lot of decorations for his birthday party as he turns two. We'll be celebrating that here over Memorial Day weekend, so we're definitely looking forward to that. And Critter Lover says, stop talking about all that. Paula Deen, that's was her name. Thank you so much. I never can remember her name. So got to love it. Let's see, what else did we have there? We had, they did some French fries as well, and it was just delicious. Good old homemade sweet tea. Oh, man, it was good. So anyway, yeah, I'm still drooling now. So we had a fun time with our family and friends this past Saturday over the weekend, and I hope you did too. It was absolutely awesome. It was funny. I know many of you follow me on Facebook, and we always have fun over on Facebook. In fact, I've got my, of course, my personal page, and then I have my professional page, and but I haven't posted on my personal page since probably December. I think 22nd was the last time I posted on that page. In fact, I've been going through and kind of, what's the word that I'm looking for? Not just deleting, but purging a lot of stuff on my personal page. So I don't really use it. I have friends there, of course, on Facebook. And I'll go down and look at different posts and like posts or make comments on posts. But I haven't posted on my personal page since I think it was December 22nd. So let's see, just in January, March, April, we're coming up on 5 months that I haven't posted on my personal page. But I do look and scroll down at what friends are doing and things like that. But I'm kind of purging some old posts and things like that to just to clean it up a little bit since I haven't posted on it for a while. But it was funny, yesterday I had posted what you would think would be a very simple family photograph, because, you know, listen to the show, a lot of you are my friends, we've known each other for years, you've listened to the show for years, I've seen you on the road, and friends are what we are. So I post things occasionally about family. They're on our Chicken Whisperer page. People seem to enjoy that. And so yesterday evening, I posted a very simple and pretty plain photograph of Caleb. So proud of the guy. Of course, like you said, he'll be two here in about 3 weeks. But so he's 23 months old. And really, since the beginning of time, he likes to play with his toys. He likes some trains. He likes tractors. He likes trucks, things like that. Anything with wheels, he's a boy. But he loves books. If he had a choice, really, with the toys that he's had, he would be content just sitting down. He'll grab a book out of the toy chest, walk over to me or mama and say, read it, read it. And he'll climb up and sit in the lap and or sit next to us on the couch, and we'll read a book. He loves books. And so he'll read them to himself. You'll hear him babbling in the background. And he knows a lot of letters now. He knows the letter O and I and E and A and things like that. And so we'll be riding down the road. There'll be the name of a store with the name O in it, you know, going through a strip center or something. And so he recognizes his letters and things, but he'll read. And yesterday I posted a picture. We were headed up to get some things done, purchase some things for his birthday. And I was like, hey, Jen, snap a picture of that. Why don't you? That's just so great. Makes a daddy proud. And so she snapped a picture of him in the back seat, sitting there very content, little sippy cup in a cup holder. Sorry, that was a surprise cough. Little sippy cup in his cup holder, built into his car seat, sitting there very content on his own, reading Go Dog Go. And that was it. How cool is that? And I put, so here's a picture of an almost two-year-old, very content in the back seat, traveling, being good, not throwing a temper tantrum, reading a book. It was awesome. I said, get a picture of that. We'll share it, and we'll put it in our memory and show him what a great little boy he was regarding travel. And so I posted, and I posted the picture, and I put, why we don't and never will have a DVD in the SUV. That was it. How simple is that? And it's funny, you know how Facebook is. So I would say that if we took a number of the 100 comments that were made and the 26 shares of the photo and the 740 people who liked the photograph. Yes, 740 people ended up liking the photograph, and it's still growing, 26 shares. I would say about 96% of the people agreed and thought it was absolutely awesome. And, of course, those who have DVDs in the car that use them maybe for a babysitter or whatnot, of course, there's always the ones that had to get up in arms about it and had every excuse in the world about why they have a DVD. Maybe they feel guilty about having one. I don't know. Because, you know, when we do something and someone calls us on it or we see somebody else doing something else, it's always like, oh, well, I use a DVD, so let me go ahead and make 50 excuses of why we have one in the car to make it justifiable. I don't know. But anyway, it was funny, some of the comments that were made over on our Facebook page, and how a simple photograph of a two-year-old reading a book in the car, behaving himself, and me commenting why we don't have a DVD because he's a good traveler and likes to read, then it sparks kind of a debate. Well, at least with about 4% of the people out of the 740 people who liked it, or 100 people that commented on it, the people who had to justify why they use a DVD in the car. But what I most was interested about, what most amazed me, was the people who says, yeah, I remember all the I would never do's back when I had kids. And like, okay, well, so they were slack, or they just, you know, lazy parents and gave in, or didn't stick to their values. I don't know. They didn't elaborate on that. Or someone had posted something like, what did they post? They posted something like, let's see how long that lasts, or something like that. Or good luck with that. That's what they put. Yeah, good luck with that. And I would always comment, and I commented on some of those that were like, yeah, let's see how long that lasts, or good luck with that, or yeah, I remember all the things I said I wasn't going to do when I was a new parent and all this kind of stuff. And me and Jen have heard that since before we had kids. And so I would follow up those with a very simple post. As I would post their name, and I would say, you know, we heard that, you know, oh, well, you'll change your mind, or you'll fall in, break in, or whatever, you'll change your mind, or you'll give in, or, you know, I remember all that, we would never do this, and then, of course, we you know, failed to follow through with it. But I said, you know what, we've heard that about not using pacifiers with our children. We heard that a million times. Oh, that'll change at 3 a.m. one morning. No. breastfeeding with gin, you know, it's hard work. It's discipline. And it's not easy. Oh, after about 3 months, you'll go to formula, that's for sure. Yeah, 15 months later, and Caleb's still being breastfed, you know. And now she's being a trooper and doing the same thing. You know, we heard about that. We heard about making our own baby food. Yeah, you'll try it for a week, and then that'll get old. You won't have the time to do it. Still making baby food for the kids. We heard that about TV in the house. We've heard that about the DVDs in the car. And so everybody that posted, oh, we'll see how long that lasts, or yeah, good luck with that. We heard the same thing about all these other topics that we're still staying true to and staying strong to. So it's interesting. I wonder when Caleb's 8 years old and there's still no DVD in the car, what they'll say. Hey, 8 years old, those nine people that said, yeah, we'll see how long this lasts, or wait till they get older. What are you going to say now? It's kind of like we had some friends that came over before we had children, and they were good friends. And they walk in, and they were like, they came in, they would be like, oh, your house is so neat. It looks like a magazine. It's just me and Jen, you know. And, yo, just wait till you have kids. And Jen got really irritated at that sometimes. And so after they leave, she's like, I wonder what they're going to say when we do have kids and the house is still somewhat orderly and neat. What's their excuse going to be then? It's like they're trying to make an excuse for their messy house? I don't know. But it really aggravated Jen, got under her skin when people would say that. And then once we had Caleb, and, you know, it's like, okay, well, then it's funny to see when I would post things about Caleb, oh, you know, the people, well, then they say, well, wait till you have two kids. Wait till you have three. Okay, and then now we've got two kids. Now what's their excuse? So it's kind of funny, you know. So I was going to put on there, and I didn't, but I was going to put on the Facebook page, I was going to put, boy, just wait until I post pictures of me and Caleb at the shooting range. Imagine what kind of posts are going to, that picture's going to spark. You know, wait until me and Caleb are out in the back 40 hunting hogs with AK-47s. Imagine what kind of... just imagine what kind of posts are going to be posted when I do that or something like that. So it's just interesting. It's interesting how Facebook works that way, you know. Something so neat or rewarding or just a simple post turns out to be some controversial topic. Oh, me. Let me wet my whistle. Anyway, about that. I mean, I could have posted probably a picture of Caleb watching a video with a DVD in the SUV, and the same thing would happen. You'd have people all totally against it, saying something. Oh, that's going to brainwash him, or critical thinking has gone out the door in America. That's why people, you know, you ought to have them read books. So it's just funny if I would have posted something opposite, all the comments that would have come to play with that. But nonetheless. Out of 740 likes of the picture, and I would say about out of the 100 posts, I would say about 90% of them were very positive. So thank you very much. It was very very interesting. So anyway, people can post that. And I guess, I don't know, is it all the psychologists out there and the psychologists and whatnot, when something like that is posted, you know, just like you can always find out what people do by posting something you do. And if they don't do it, then all of a sudden they have to justify it, or they have to somehow put down why they do what they do to try to make it right or to make them feel better. Is that how it works? I don't know. So just kind of interesting. Like someone had said that, you know, my kid can't read in the car. He gets car sick. Okay, there's toys, there's puzzles, there's games, there's cars, there's blocks, you know, puzzles, you know, okay, the DVD, you know, and lots of people talked about the old days. Oh my gosh, the trips we took cross country without a DVD and we did just fine and things like that. I mean, it sparked a lot of fun things and memories. Like I had posted on there, I said, how many people remember, you know, I remember the 1972 Oldsmobile Delta 88. This big tank of a vehicle we would take on Florida trips. And I remember laying in the floor. You know, you had that transmission hump there, the drive shaft hump that went to the back tires. You know, a lot of cars front-wheel drive don't have that, obviously. But that thing would get nice and warm from the heat with that thing spinning underneath there. And you could lay down in the floor and take a nap. You could almost fit on one side and curl up between that drive shaft hump in the back seat and the door. Now, remember that? Or how about this? How many of us have done this? And lots of people have commented. I remember taking a nap in the back deck of the window. You know, it's a big four-door tank of a sedan, and there was that big deck there above the back seat in the window itself, and you could climb up there. You could lay down on that back deck where the speakers were, stretch out long. You'd have the sun beating in through the glass. And, yeah, metal dashboards. Misty was saying, yeah, they had metal dashboards and the metal in the back, too. And they had the speakers there in the back deck. You could lay up there, stretch out. The sun coming through the window would be nice and warm. You could take a great nap up there. How many remember that the first seatbelt was actually Mama's arm? You're sitting in the front seat, you know, and all of a sudden Mom puts on her brakes, and here comes, it was an automatic reflex. Well, Mama, she'd put that arm right across your chest and try to hold you in your seat. Not if you hit a brick wall, that's going to do a hill of beans thing. But yeah, y'all remember that? All of those great things, you throwing that arm out across your chest. That was the first seatbelt, was Mama's arm. So I also put some things in there like, hey, I used to drink from the water hose, too, and I remember riding my bike without a helmet. Man, I guess I was a real risk taker when I was little. So anyway, we had fun with that, but it was a little simple comment about how well Caleb rides and reads and loves books turned into a pretty neat little debate there on Facebook, and it always turns out to be that way when you try to do something that's kind of innocent. Other people, I guess, have to justify why they've made the decision to do something different to make them feel better, because I could care less. But it's just interesting how that works. But you can go check it out over at Facebook page. It was fun. But it brought back a lot of memories with me and Mama and things like that. Now, here's the seatbelt. There's Mama's arm. And taking long trips, you know, counting the cars with just one headlight. You know, Popeye, is that what it was called? Or counting bugs or Volkswagens and bus. A Volkswagen bus was 2 points and a bug was 1 point. Counting telephone poles. Going by a graveyard and holding your breath from the time it starts to the time you've passed it. And you just fun games like that instead of just sitting there glued to a DVD or a little electronic babysitter. What about good old conversation with Mom or Dad? So anyway, it was it brought back good memories. We had a good time, and it brought back memories for me in that old 1972 Oldsmobile Delta 88, golden color with those big silver hubcaps. Oh, me, gotta love it. Alrighty, so that was fun. You can head over there, and I'm going to go and scroll up the chat room here and see what other folks and other kind of memories that trips back in the day were brought back, because I always love reading about those, so gotta love it. But hey, let's get over here to the phone lines. Again, we got a chock full week this week with some great guests, and today's no exception. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, talking about gut health. How important is that? And we'll just go ahead and bring him live right now. Let's give him a great Chicken Whisper welcome. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Hey, Andy, how's it going?
Good. Do you remember taking those long trips in those big cars and laying in the back window or laying in the floorboard?
Yeah, I remember it, and I'll tell you a little thing that we used to do, a little bit different than some of the things you did, maybe not so different, but
yeah.
I saw that post. I refrained from saying anything because it just starts the firestorm that you're talking about, and I've recently responded to a couple of little things on Facebook just as a ha-ha thing for myself, makes my day. And I credit my ability, at least in the past here, to remember things to the fact that we used to play a game when we used to ride in the car, and that game was we used to memorize license plates.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and you know, it became such a game with my mother and myself, you know, that she would delay it and say, the blue car back there, what was the license plate number? And if you weren't paying attention, you know, and so then you became, you know, cognizant of every car that was around you because you didn't know. She's going to say, well, what was the number of the black car? You know, what was the number of the red car?
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, we did those kinds of games. And, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. And then you brought up the Volkswagen thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what other people do around here, but they call them punch buggies now. It's a modern term. And my grandson is into it big time. And you know, I do not allow him to come with me on Saturday or any other day with any of those damn electronic devices, period.
Yeah.
None. And because what I found is that there is no conversation. There's my head buried in a little thing in between my two little fingers, and we're oblivious to everything else that's going on around us. And so I banned those things from you want to come out with me, you leave it home.
Right.
And it opens up the window of opportunity, you know, for children to interact then, and it goes back to doing the things that he really wanted to do, but they get torn between playing those games. And I'm not saying that they're all bad for him, but I don't want it around me. And, you know, then he'll ask me, you know, well, I'm stuck, Pop. How do I get to the next level? I said, well, you're stuck because I don't even know how to play it, let alone, you know, and I'm not interested. And so we just leave it home. And it just opens up so many opportunities to look at things and the landscape and so on and so forth. So, you know, everybody's got their own thing, their own shortcomings. People do get defensive when they see it, you know, and make the off-the-cuff comment. You know, I've said this to you before, and I'll say it again. I said it on the air. I said it to your face. I applaud what you and Jen do. Do it as long as you can. It's that simple. End of story. At the end of the road, he'll be better for it, and you'll be better parents for it, and in my opinion, in many cases, a more balanced child. I see it with my own grandson.
Yep. I posted also about one of the, and we all have them, one of the, we hope to do this or what have you. And it was there's not many, but like we wanted to really use cloth diapers. That was one of the things we looked into. We even bought a few before he was born. But anybody that travels as much as we do, I would like to meet the people who travel as much as we do and use cloth diapers because it's not really like you can stop at the rest stop and do a load of laundry of poopy diapers and get a bath. So it was one of those things where we have loved to do it, but it was I'm not saying impossible because our forefathers before there were these Pampers and stuff, they did cloth diapers, but I just don't know if they traveled and put 3,000 miles a month on their vehicles like we did in April. But it was just one of those things that we would have loved to use cloth, but it would have been a little difficult spending time on the road with cloth diapers. So we commend folks that do that and have the ability to do that, but it was just the thing that we intended on doing. We still have some in the house here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But being on the road, it was almost an impossibility. So, yeah, there's always those things that come up. You have good intentions, and then they're like, well, that's not going to end up panning out, cloth diapers and being on the road. So, but it all worked out. But it was pretty interesting how those things spark. And like I said, you know as well as I, if I would have posted a picture of him watching a DVD, then I would have heard from
oh, yeah, you would have heard about all those other people. Oh, you gave up finally, huh? Yep, yep, you caved in. Yep, you certainly did. Yep, yep.
So, yeah, so darned if you do, darned if you don't. So,
yeah, I don't look at what other people do and unless it's outright, you know, abuse. You know, I don't get too much into what other people do. If it suits you, it's fine with me. You know, who the heck am I to tell you how to run it? You know, kids don't come with directions. And, you know, putting your best foot forward from my perspective is how you go about doing it. And you try to do, you know, the best thing you can with them. And I think that the more they read, the better readers they are.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with that. And yeah. Jen being a teacher, I contribute a lot to that, to her being a teacher and a great, great reading teacher. But, yeah, you're right. Like you said, I think last week, that you don't care if someone uses Cord or Ampril. They can knock themselves out.
Knock yourself out. If you want to go and seek out the Cord, go ahead. Be my guest. You know, it's always easier. It's always easier for people who are on the sidelines to tell somebody else how to do something that they refuse to do themselves. And that always has amazed me, even in everyday life. I look around and I see people, you know, struggling with, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 kids. You know, I wonder what the drive is to have so many when you can hardly afford one. I'm not picking on anybody, any race, creed, or color, or anything. I'm talking about people in general. You go to Ethiopia, people that can't even support themselves as far as food is concerned and everything else, but they all have children. I don't get it. I just don't get it, you know, under those kinds of conditions. So people are different, and, you know, far be it from me to figure it all out. But at any rate, we're going to try to figure out what's going on in chicken's gut.
I think that's important, too, because everybody's going to go out and buy them fruit on the bottom Yoplait yogurt and think it's
it's an interesting thing I run into, and on this show, and I run into questions from people all over, you know, about the things that they feed their birds. I rarely get into it as far as, you know, what they're feeding, because if they're happy with it, I'm happy with it. You know, if it's making them ill, then it's a different story.
Right. But birds are healthy. They're looking good. They're not sick.
It doesn't matter if you feed them broccoli, if you want to feed them bananas, and you want to feed them banana peel, and you can deal with it when they get the crop bound or whatever, that's fine with me. You know, just be aware of the consequences of what happens at the end of the day. And, you know, so that's what led me to put this particular idea forward about, you know, the bird's gut health and everything else. We've talked about it, you know, probiotics and stuff before, and we'll do that again today. To some degree. But, you know, it's important to understand that during the developmental process, when we talked about incubation, we talked about how the deficiencies in the parent stock, the rooster and the hen that were producing these eggs, those deficiencies are then put forth and extrapolated out into the offspring. So if it's deficient in the parents, it's going to be deficient in the offspring, by and large, as a general rule. If it's marginal, it'll end up being marginal in those birds, in the offspring, and even deficient. And therein lies a lot of the problems. I read a lot of things on Facebook, and people send me emails all the time about all kinds of different abnormalities, and a lot of them can be you know, alleviated by just doing a little bit more maintenance on the birds, understanding, and we've talked about this, what a monumental undertaking it is for a chicken to lay an egg in the first place. And, you know, that's part of the reason why we do these shows, to try to get this information out there. So you spend all this time and effort with breeders and buying the best stock you can in most cases, and you get these eggs from these birds, and you hatch them. You spend another 3 weeks of your time and your life that you can't get back, putting all this effort into these birds, only to have them hatch out with abnormalities or do something to them after they hatch and further inhibit their growth or cause other problems to come to the forefront here. So What we're talking about here is that when a bird hatches out at 21 days of age, okay, it is not complete. It looks like it is complete to you on the outside. It's got nice yellow down in most cases. Some cases of other birds, they're speckled and spots and black and all different colors. And in most cases, they're beautiful. But at that point, you must understand that the intestinal tract of this bird is extremely immature. It will take at least another 10 to 14 days for the intestinal tract to mature to the age of that bird and then be populated with the proper gut bacteria. We call it gut flora, gut microbiota. You call it whatever you want. Doesn't really matter. Any one of those. So this all starts, this development of the intestinal tract starts late in the bird's cycle in the egg. Around the 17th day or so, it's always happening prior to that, but around the 17th, 18th day of incubation, the speed and the at which the intestinal tract starts to mature and develop really speeds up. Okay, prior to that, while the intestinal tract is there as a tube, so to speak, we start to see the development of what's called villi. Now, this is one of the most important things to understand about the villi. The villi are like little finger projections. It's the easiest way to explain it in the intestinal tract. We've talked about it before with coccidiosis, what happens to the villi in the intestine when you have coccidiosis and it kills them off and you don't get the nutrient absorption down in the what they're called crypts. And it just means the bottom of where those villi come to touch the actual intestine. So when you have this situation and it's developing in the embryo like this, and then as soon as the bird is hatched out, I've dealt with people that have given all kinds of stuff, when they first hatch out. There's a group of people, I say a group, not collectively, but there are people there that want to give them sugar water when they're first born.
Uh-huh,
thinking that they are going to get energy from the sugar that's in the water. Well, that's not going to happen because the maturity of the intestines, okay, and this is a highfalutin term, this is called a goblet cell, okay. These are part of the intestinal tract that give off a substance called mucin, okay? Mucin turns into mucus in the intestine,
right.
And that mucus is what protects the intestine from pathogens that the bird might pick up in its environment, okay? The growth of these villi is extremely important. Adding carbohydrates of any kind, whether they're simple or complex, at that point prior to a bird having its normal feed, ends up having villi that are shortened, don't have the depth because of that, they don't have the width, and therefore they don't produce the proper amount of mucin. So the intestine is not covered with the mucin to produce the mucus, and the mucus can only be released from the goblet cells and the mucin. I know it's complex, it sounds like, but it's really pretty simple. It's really pretty simple. You got a goblet cell producing the mucin through the villi, and you've got the mucin producing mucus, okay? It's really simple. It's a three-step process, basically. Carbohydrates interfere with that.
Okay.
Because there is not enough digestive enzymes being produced. The carbohydrates do not stimulate the digestive system to produce the proper enzymes to break down the carbohydrates. So they do not help the villi grow, and they do not help the mucin to be produced. Therefore, further putting the bird at risk of ingesting a pathogen from its environment, and when it ingests that pathogen from the environment, let's say, for argument's sake, it's just the easiest one we can come across right now, coccidiosis, okay? So when it ingests that, now it doesn't have enough mucin to protect itself. The gut-associated lymphoid tissue called GALT, which is in the gut, we've talked about that before, about 60-70% of the bird's immune system lies within the intestinal tract.
Yeah.
So when these villi become destroyed or they're not allowed to flourish, it decreases the surface area of the intestine and therefore decreases the amount of nutrient absorption we have through the intestinal wall. So the first thing I would do, if especially with ship birds, if you're hatching your own, it's a little bit different. and I'll go into that here as we go on. Ship birds are in bigger trouble than birds that you would hatch yourself. And what I mean by that is, and we've talked about this when we did the seminar hatching, you know, if they hatched out at midnight and they're being processed and shipped the next day, their 72-hour window started at midnight. And a lot of people forget that. And so the longer they are without food, the more vulnerable those birds are. That's why you get some that are dead. That's why you get some that don't thrive after they get there. The goblet cells aren't producing the mucin. The mucin isn't producing the mucus. The mucus isn't protecting the intestine. And because it is the granulated type food, the roughness of the food that stimulates the intestine to produce the proper enzymes for digestion, and that kickstarts the whole digestive system. That gets the whole ball of wax rolling. So the first thing you want to do with birds, in my opinion, that are coming in that have been stressed to God knows what, being shipped from Timbuktu, is to put a probiotic in that drinking water and let them have that for about the first hour. Okay? Let them get a good drink. Let them get rehydrated because they're stressed 9 ways from Sunday. There is a tremendous amount of stress there for these birds, being without the nutrients, being stressed, hot or cold, crowded, being bounced around, thrown around in a box, in a truck, in an airplane, or wherever they're going. So this is a problem, and my recommendation is a good, strong probiotic in the drinking water for at least the first hour, and then immediately after that, let them have all the food they'll consume and all the fresh water they'll consume. Because one begets the other. The lack of water will mean a lack of mucin produced in the intestine and less mucus being produced at the same time. Because the mucin is water-soluble. It depends on water to be basically, for all intents and purposes, released properly in the intestine. So when we look at this, we've got a situation where these things start out before you even get to see a chick, before they even pip the egg. This process of getting the intestine jump-started, getting things moved out, getting these goblet cells to produce the mucin, and all of this, getting these villi to grow. And I talked about this when we talked about probiotics, looking at an intestine with and without probiotics under an electron microscope. The difference between the two is just huge. If you were to look at the one under the that had no probiotic in it, you would take your fingers. I've always said hold your fingers up in front of your face and look at the villi that are there, those 5 fingers you've got. And the crypts are at the bottom of your fingers. So if you take your hand, your other finger on one of your other hands and roll it in between, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Take the middle 3 fingers, if you can, and just put the thumb and the pinky up. That's what it looks like without a probiotic. When you have the probiotic, that whole center part in between your thumb and your pinky is packed, just packed with cells and mucin and all of these good things that are necessary for the bird to have good digestion. So the whole purpose behind this then is if you don't get a bird off to a good start, they're always behind, they're underweight, they don't feather out as nice, their color is never as good, and all these things. And then you end up paying, a lot of money to correct these things. And so the importance of getting the breeders right, getting the developing embryo right, and then taking care of it after it gets out of that egg is crucial to good gut health for these birds. And it's been proven many, many times that birds that have good gut health are followed through with a probiotic in many cases, they're able to ward off a lot of these intestinal diseases because there's no place for the bad guys to set up shop. If you go back and look at your fingers with your pinky and your thumb up, you know, there's a lot of space in there for guys to stop in and attach to the intestinal wall and start producing poisons that some of these bacteria and stuff put out and destroy the lining of the intestine. So what you're going to want to do is make sure that you have it populated. If you have it populated with the lactobacillus from the probiotic and other bacteria that are in that probiotic, that will fill itself in, and there's no place for these guys to go. There's just no place there. So, and not only that, the lactobacillus is going to produce acid, going to change the pH of the intestine, and help flush these bad guys out. So that's one of the things you want to do as far as that is concerned. The mucin also does help with digestion. The height of the villi is important as well. Again, going back, when it's short, it has a tendency to not hold the feed as well. The crypts are not as deep. There isn't as much nutrient take up in the intestine, and lies a problem there. Now, we can go into what kind of, I'll go back into the intestine here in a moment. I think it might be smart to take a look at a probiotic and go back through some of that understand that the different types of bacteria like different types of pH in the intestine. So the optimal pH range from 5.5 to 7 where you want to be, and the 7.5 to 9 is roughly where the pathogenic bacteria like to be. Now, I've got a paper here. I just want to read a couple of things off this. I don't normally do
okay.
This. It's, I think it's important to put this information out as soon as I find where I put it. This office, geez. God, gotta love it. This is a study that was done, and it doesn't actually have a date on it here, but this was done by some Pakistanis, and it's a valid study. Okay, it's scientific, and what they're talking about here is from the water system, from the drinkers that birds have, keeping them clean, keeping pathogens out, and this is important. When you start looking at baby chicks and even adult birds, but more so baby chicks, because we're trying to keep this intestinal tract intact. We're trying to keep it free of as many pathogens as we can so we get the optimal growth and we get good, healthy birds that go out and fulfill their genetic potential. So we know they all poop in the water. We know that, okay? But the cleanliness of that water and the bacteria that ends up in that water is quite extensive. So let me just give you an idea here. They took normal drinkers, and then they took some samples from some water tanks.
Okay.
And in those results, 44% of the drinkers tested positive for E. coli. Okay. 19% tested positive for salmonella. In the water tanks, 28% were E. coli positive, and 9% were salmonella positive. Now, salmonella, as much as we've heard about it, is not near as prevalent in the environment of the poultry in a lot of places, some places more so than others, as the E. coli is, okay? But, so then you go on, and you want to look at this. So they ran some tests to decide the percentage of these E. coli strains that they picked up that were resistant to different antibiotics. And I'll just run down them real quick. I think it's worth noting, that this is a problem and that this is why you want to keep this gut health really, really pristine if you can. The better off you are in the beginning. Look, they're going to be exposed to things down the road. We know that. What we're trying to do here is prevent the early exposure to pathogens before not only the intestinal immune system gets going, but the digestive system is even matured, okay? So that's the whole idea behind this, okay? 82.6% were resistant to ampicillin. 65% were resistant to cephalexin-type products. 26% to ciprofloxacin, which is in the same classification as Baytril. Okay, they're all what they call fluoroquinolones. And let me see here, 21.7% were resistant to afloxacin. That's similar to the Baytril. 100% were resistant to gentamicin. And that's odd, because gentamicin's been around for a long time, mm-hmm. and evidently it's got a workaround for it, okay? Now, looking at salmonella, the ampicillin was 55.5%. The cephalexins were in the 66.6 category. The cipro was 22.2. And it was actually higher on the afloxacin for the salmonella than it was for the E. coli, 33.3%. And 100% of the salmonella was resistant to gentamicin, and 100% of the salmonella was resistant to amoxicillin, and they didn't run a test on it for the E. coli. I don't know why, but they didn't. So you can see there's a wide range of medications being used that have a great percentage of them, resistant to these pathogens. And some of these pathogens, E. coli and salmonella, two of the top ones that people are concerned about and worry about. So what you want to take away from this at this point is you want to make sure that the water is changed frequently, as frequently and as often as you possibly can. And the answer is, the idea behind that is obvious. Letting them have access to possible pathogens that they may have picked up or whatever in that drinking water is not going to be beneficial to their intestinal health. And it's important. I've been researching this stuff out for many, many years, trying to come up with some ideas and things as to why birds stop eating. And I may have a couple of clues to offer here today. I can't say that the information would be definitive because I don't have, nor have I been able to find any research to back it up. Because we all know that the research comes out of the commercial sector. There's nothing being done, for the most part, that I'm aware of in a private sector setting because of the funding. A lot of the funding that's done for these things comes from universities through the federal government or commercial companies, whether they be feed, antibiotic, or poultry companies, to do particular research. If it doesn't affect them, then nobody's going to spend the money. And like Andy, you were talking about last week, nobody's going to go in there and, pull pasty butt off of 100,000 chickens. It's not going to happen.
Exactly.
And, they're not interested, like I said, unless the mortality gets high, nobody's going to go in there and start looking at birds and say, Molly over in the corner, she's not eating. Maybe we ought to take a look and see why. Molly's tomorrow's mortality, and they move on. And our world is a little bit different. We're concerned with Molly over in the corner when she's not eating and not behaving the way we would expect a normal chicken to behave. So that's the whole idea behind this conversation today. That's the whole idea why I keep looking and researching around to see what I can find as clues, because there isn't anything out there. There's nobody to help us. There's nobody going to say to us, that's the problem. I've discussed this 9 times from Sunday with my vet friends that are been in the business, some as long as I have, some not as long as I have, and the proverbial answer comes back, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
And that's, that's okay. I understand. They're not God either, and neither am I, and that's why we're trying to, figure this out as best we can. But my whole idea here with this conversation today, too, is to try to prevent these things as best we can, trying to make more of a swing towards preventative medicine than be proactive on things. I think people will get a lot further down the road. They'll spend less time doctoring the chickens. They'll spend less time on medications. Probiotics are an important, powerful tool in your toolbox, If you don't believe in them, I don't believe in using yogurt. I don't care. You know, especially on young birds. If you want to use it on old birds, fine. It's okay with me. It's your money.
But, I was going to say that's my issue is that, you know, I think these folks are trying to do good. They're thinking that, hey, I'm helping my birds because I love them by buying fruit on the bottom Yoplait yogurt. When like you're saying, if you add up the cost of yogurt nowadays per cup, how much you're giving them every month, and the cost of a good probiotic specifically for them that you can put in the water that we know is going to do good, it may be actually cheaper than buying a cup of yogurt every day for them, and they're not getting the high fructose corn syrup, the artificial flavors, the artificial colors, all that sugar and everything else, and it's not helping their gut anyway when you could probably spend less money and actually be helping them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's hard to change you know, people's beliefs, people's you know, attitudes. I mean, you're finding that out just making a simple post about your kids sitting in the back seat of a car reading a book. So, I mean, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it is very, very difficult, and therein lies part of the problem. Again, my conversation here today is not to twist anybody's arm. My conversation is always to put out the information and let the people decide for themselves. You know, you either can do it or you can't do it. One or the other. But probiotics are important, and if you don't think probiotics are important, I got something else here I'll share with you all because I think it's pretty cool, and I think we've shared this once before, but I think this is even more interesting. We've talked about in the past on the human side, and it's actually an animal problem as well because there's some claim that it's coming from tainted chicken, pork, beef, and what have you. But Clostridium difficile, or called C. diff. It's one of the number one killers in America, especially of old folks in nursing homes, and very common today to go into a hospital and pick it up, and resistant to a lot of drugs, very difficult to treat. If my memory serves me correctly, it is an encapsulated bacteria, which means it lives inside of a very strong capsule, and the capsule is hard to get antibiotics to break through. So there in partly lies the problem. Some of the medications, I had a friend that went through this several years ago, and he said that, you know, and they were using metronidazole on him at that time. It's used in humans for some vaginal problems in women and other bacterial problems as well. We use it in chickens and hawks and stuff for canker and frounce. And at any rate, he was taking that stuff and had him on a high dose of it, and he said that the damn dose of the stuff almost killed him near as much as the disease itself.
Oh, geez, yeah.
You know, it's a very, very, very tough intestinal disease. Now, bearing in mind that on the human side, just like chickens, the intestinal tract holds a lot of their immune system, about 70% on humans, okay? So what is the remedy now for people who have had C. diff and it's not getting any better? The remedy for it right now, and I don't think there's a lot of it being done. I know of six cases where it has been done, but it's a fecal transplant, and where they take a person with a normal fecal dropping and they transplant that into the gut of a person who has got C. diff. And guess what happens? The person gets better. So gut health is extremely important, whether you're a human, a chicken, a dog, a cat.
Yeah.
Because if your gut's in good shape, every part of your body's probably going to be in good shape because of the amount of immune cells that are available in the intestinal tract, whether it be human or chicken. And this is not nonsense. This here is an article. I'll just read you the title of it. Not glamorous, DACA's universal donor for fecal transplants. And this is at Emory University. He's a medical resident. He's taken the donation to a whole new level, agreeing to provide stool samples for multiple patients who need life-saving procedures called fecal transplants. So it's an interesting thing, but it's all about the proper gut flora, gut microbiota, that we've been talking about here extrapolates itself out to chickens. We've talked before about it having possible certain effects for certain people with certain types of schizophrenia. it has been found not to have the same type of gut bacteria that normal people consider to have. And I don't know how the hell they figured out normal, but I know a whole lot of people aren't normal. So, but at any rate, all of these things, come into play. So then we move on from the mucin. Did you want to do your...
Yeah, we can do a break, and then there's a couple of questions in the chat room. Let me read them now.
Okay.
So we can answer when we get back. Let's see. Doc, we have well water and rain barrels. Which is better for my birds? And then we've got one here that says, is the dosage of valbazin the same for bantams as well as large fowl? So we'll answer those when we get back. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. We're talking all about gut health and digestion for your birds. Very important topic. Hope you're paying attention and taking lots of notes. And we'll be back right after this short break. Also, later in the show, we've got a riddle. You can call in if you know the answer to the riddle. Then Doc will explain to us. You'll get six tickets for a drawing that's coming up next year for a, I believe it's a GQF Sportsman's Incubator. And throughout the season, on occasion, he's going to be doing some riddles. And if you win, if you're the right caller, you'll win six tickets or entries into the pot for the drawing of this awesome incubator. And that'll be shipped anywhere in the lower 48 states. So he'll be telling us about that a little bit later in the show as well. And you'll have a chance to get six tickets into that bucket for that drawing. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually.
Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
Yeah!
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today, of course, is Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Today's topic, we're talking all about gut health, and we got great episodes all week. Tomorrow, we have the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Wednesday, we have Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Thursday, we got poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCray. How about that? Hope you can join us every day, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Alrighty, we'll bring back Doc live on the show. And those are two questions that were posted in the chat room. Since I know you're a water expert, you can probably elaborate on that one as well.
Yeah, what I would suggest, it's hard to, I don't know whether either one of them is any better. Well water is not bad all by itself. It depends on a lot of factors. Well water, if your septic, if they've got well water, they probably have a septic system. That would be my guess anyway. If your septic system is far enough away from your well, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of contamination that way. The problem I might have with the rain barrel water would be, if there is any outside contamination from, let's say, squirrels running around on the roof, wherever this comes from, or whatever. It's hard to say. If I were concerned about it, I would either, get it tested or run some oxine in the water on a regular basis and see how that works out. But it's a tough one to call. All I can say is I have well water at my house, and thank God we've never had a problem that I know of that came directly from the well. I'd just as soon drink my water here as drink anybody's, I'm not a big water fan, period. But, as far as the rainwater, I guess it's how it's collected, I would think that to properly take care of that type of water, I think you would probably want to filter it in some way, shape, or fashion. But, there are a lot of pollutants in the air, and that comes down in rainwater, hence the words acid rain and so on and so forth. So I would probably opt for the water out of the well being probably better than the rain barrel water.
Not to mention all the wild bird poop that's washed off the roof and into the rain barrels.
Yeah, and that's the thing you can't control, there's so much junk floating around in the environment these days, and not all of it comes from here. There's a lot of it comes from other countries and ends up over here, and vice versa to some degree. But I think if I were worried about that, I think I would sanitize the water as best that one can, and go on with it from there. If you're at all worried about it or have a concern, I would probably, get a hold of my health department and see if they could run an analysis on your water. Most places these days, or at least in the old days, would do it free. Today they probably want your firstborn. With all the budget cuts and all the other nonsense that goes on out there today, and we don't have any money for White House tours, but we've got $100 million to give the Syrian rebels. Okay, all right. That's what I would do as far as that's concerned. And was the other one deal with Valbazin?
Yes, and is there a dose different for bantams versus large fowl?
I don't think it's necessary, but if you wanted to do it, they can send me an email and I'll send them the directions for figuring it out on a per kilogram basis. A kilogram being 2.27 pounds. So if you looked at a 5-pound bird, if you looked at a 5-pound bird being 2.27 kilograms, then you would divide that by 2.2 and then multiply that times the 20 milligrams per kilogram. That's how much valbazin to use. I can give them a written thing on it. It's a lot easier. If they want to do that, they just send me an email requesting it and be glad to send it to them. But I don't necessarily care whether they cut down on it or not for a bantam. The intestines of birds are long, and that's why we dilute it with water. Other people I know give it straight out of the bottle, and they can do as they please. But you get a much better coating of the intestine with a larger dose. And so we actually, our normal dose is 1 cc of valbazin, 8 cc's of water, and 2 cc's of that down the throat. And that seems to work out pretty well, whether it's a bantam or whether it's a large fowl.
Okay, perfect. She may want to contact you, give you a call or email.
Yeah, if she gives me an email, it'll go right back out to her. I've got it all outlined.
Great.
All my directions I've got on the computer for the most part, so it's not a big deal for me to send it to somebody. All I need is her email address. So, and we don't put them on any list. We don't come back and solicit business through email. We don't do all that crap. I've got time to blow my nose some days. A little fool with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You won't email Doc Brown and then tomorrow have 9 emails about Viagra in your email box.
Oh, hopefully not. Jeez. Hopefully not.
That is for your chickens, your roosters. Oh, me. See it now. I can see it now from Peter Brown, you know, getting spam mail from First State Vet Supply. Are your hens happy the way they should be? Is your rooster seem to have lackluster and not so manly? Oh my gosh! Only
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Some information that you know may make people sit up and take notice. And these are average figures, so it could be up or down by any amount, depending on birds' environment. And don't forget, a lot of these things that happen to birds are in their environment, things that are introduced to them by bringing in another bird who's been in a lackluster environment into your pristine environment. Now, everybody's in a lackluster environment. So, but there are at least 40 different bacteria living in the intestine of a bird at any given time. Okay, it's a lot. It's a lot. And the cecal tonsil of the bird, I'm probably getting the cart before the horse here a little bit, but while I'm on that subject, can take at least 30 days to colonize with the proper bacteria for digestion. Now, the cecal tonsil, or what we call the two blind pouches attached to the bird's intestine, they're responsible for the proper digestion of all of the heavy particles that the rest of the intestine can't digest. Okay? And anybody who's been around chickens for any reasonable period of time will know a cecal tonsil dropping because they have a very odorous odor. And you know, we just need to take care of the intestine. I hope this is making sense to everybody as much as it does to me. By acidification of the intestine, you prevent the bad guys from living there. It's been said people like apple cider vinegar. I'm not a fan of apple cider vinegar. I recommend it on occasion. I don't care if you use it. If you're happy with it, use it. But the problem that I see with apple cider vinegar, it does not stimulate the villi to grow. It does not increase the surface area of the intestinal tract. In my opinion, you are much better off with a probiotic. You want to get a good probiotic that has multiple species of gut-friendly bacteria in it. All the main ones now are Lactobacillus acidophilus is the big shot in the whole group. I'm not going to bore everybody to death with going through the others that are in it. We have sold here and continue to sell a multi-species probiotic that we are extremely happy with. My feedback from the clientele that use it on a regular basis are just ecstatic about it. So if you want to use apple cider vinegar, be my guest. I don't have a problem with it, not at all. It is a good product. It will, in many cases, clear up some intestinal ills for sure, mainly by the addition of acidification to the intestine, making it tough for the bad guys to live there. Whether you have it with what they call mother or without mother really doesn't matter. The mother part of it is supposed to give you some sort of nutritional value as far as minerals and that kind of thing is concerned. I've not seen any definitive study to say that. I've heard it come out of a few university people's mouths, and I don't contest it. I don't have anything to offset it to prove it one way or another. Again, if you're happy with it, use it. If you're getting good results with it, by all means, use it. So, but for my perspective, looking at the data over the years, I've been selling probiotics from way before they ever became popular, way before. And to say I'm a fan of it, I would say is not doing my feelings on it justice when you come right down to it, because I feel that not only on a poultry side, but even on a human side, we're starting to see more and more. There's a new probiotic coming out here later in this country. I believe it's already available in Canada, Lactobacillus reuteri. That has a double-blind study. I think I've mentioned it before, but it has been proven to lower blood cholesterol levels anywhere between 5 and 11, over 11%. It's a natural product. All you do is put in a cup of water and swallow it. You know, I mean, it's, how hard is that? So there's a whole lot of good things coming along and things being looked at and, you know, things of that nature. But so when you look at the bird's crop, we'll jump over here now to the crop a little bit. And crop's nothing more than a elastic bag, so to speak, that expands and contracts with the amount of food, water, combination food and water that are put into it. It does have the ability to contract, and that is controlled by two nerves on the right-hand side. They're called vagal nerves, and I think herein lies some of the problem with this thing of birds not wanting to eat. I can't say for a second that I'm correct. It's a hunch, a thought, an idea after reading volumes and volumes and volumes of material over the years and trying to make some sense out of some of the things that are being said that don't have enough research behind them either. And, you know, is it the interference with Merix or something else that is not making the contraction in the crop? Because the proventriculus is the next organ that the feed is going to be fed into. And it also is controlled by the vagus nerves, okay? The vagus nerves are most commonly infected with Merix. I don't know if there's a connection between all of this that I'm saying, okay? Kind of just talking off the cuff about stuff that I've read, inferences being made, but nobody coming forward and putting their finger on it and say, that's it. But it warrants looking at, from my perspective, the way that the proventriculus starts to get into action within the digestive system is by the feed that is in the crop being forced by the crop in its contractions down into the proventriculus. As it starts to enter the proventriculus, that makes the proventriculus then go into a spasmodic type of a contraction to pull this feed in along the intestine. It is really an amazing process. So if there is some interference, be it Merix or some other unknown entity or something I'm not thinking about at this point that is interfering with the ability of either one of these organs to contract, the bird is going to feel like it's satiated, maybe. Also, the hypothalamus in the brain is the organ responsible for turning on hunger and turning it off. So is it in some way involved in this, at least from my perspective, three-way triangular situation? I can't say. So I have, you know, been wrangling with this for quite some time, trying to, come up with some sort of reasonable answer. And I, the only thing I think that I'm going to adjust, and I have been doing it lately, is that when birds get in this type of a position, maybe we're better off to go with the bear baby aspirin routine with the turmeric, with the bioperine, and see where it takes us. It can't hurt. I don't know. In some cases, you know, we tube feed birds and the feed just sits there and it sits there and it sits there. It's very, 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 very slow to get out. To me, that means there's either no contraction going on in the crop or there's very little contraction to no contraction going on in the proventriculus, even though food may be being forced down there. And is that in turn telling the hypothalamus that we're not hungry so we don't need to eat? I don't know. It's
right,
an interesting,
right.
It's an interesting, phenomenon. But generally speaking, most feed that is put into the crop will pass out of the crop, depending on how coarse it is, in roughly about 2 hours, sometimes three. And the more coarse the feed, the longer it takes to get out of the crop. And that, I think that, you know, I know people that feed whole corn. I know people that feed peas and these kinds of things. If birds are loading up on it and eating a lot of that corn and a lot of those peas, you're not doing them any justice because you're making it so that the feed does not move properly out of the crop and down into the proventriculus and down into the intestinal tract for proper digestion. So I would probably refrain from feeding a more coarse feed and go to something, along the lines of a small pellet, that type of thing. I don't think pellets are a big deal. They seem to break down pretty easily, but whole corn doesn't break down.
Right.
But, this is all moved along by what we call peristaltic action in the intestine. There is some retroperistaltic action that takes place in the lower parts of the intestine, which is feed going down so far and backing up, so to speak, in the intestine a little bit, and that's how feed gets into the cecal tonsils that we talked about earlier. It's a phenomenal thing. It's something that I've had to research out on my own. It wasn't taught in school when I went to school. They probably didn't know about it then. But it is very, very interesting to research this out and read about it and try to digest it and understand it. Another thing that's important for proper digestion overall is the fact that water is a crucial part of the digestion of feed, not only for chickens, but more than likely any animal. So if you want the feed to pass through, make sure that the water is clean, make sure that it's cool, make sure that it's plentiful. Birds during daylight hours up until shortly before they go to roost should never be out of water, ever.
Uh-huh.
And because if they're hungry, they're going to eat, but they're going to be looking for some water to wash it, not only wash it down, so to speak, but to help digest it, that kind of thing. The cecal tonsils, they can empty anywhere from 2 to 5 times a day, depending on the type of feed. The more coarse the feed, the more they may empty. It is more of a fermentation process in the cecal tonsil, hence the horrendous odor that they produce by sitting in that blind cecal pouch for hour after hour after hour, and then finally being defecated out. Definitely will get your attention.
Huh.
So, when we look at this thing in its totality, the idea is to start out with a good, healthy breeding flock, to get good, healthy embryos developing in the egg so that when they hatch out at 21 days, a nice, clean facility with clean water, good feed, and as a little exposure at that point to disease pathogens as possible, the supplementation of a probiotic in the drinking water is critical. It's been proven time in and time out. There's reams and reams and reams of data, old and new, to show that the lactobacillus enhances the development of the height, the breadth, and the depth of the villi and the crypts therein. So it is really to your advantage to look at this and decide for yourself what works for you and your operation. When you get birds that are shipped in, like I said, probiotic in the drinking water for the first hour or so wouldn't hurt a bit because they're going to be dehydrated. It's tough to give a bird a dehydrated food and expect it to do its job when they're already dehydrated. So, you know, I would do that. If you're hatching the birds yourself, people have a tendency to leave birds in until all of them are dried off. I don't think that's a good idea. I think when a majority of them have hatched and appear to be dry, I would pull them out of there and then, you know, leave the rest in there to hatch on their own, the late hatchers, because they may never hatch that other group. And you want to get these ones that are healthy and have hatched out of that overly warm environment and get them on food and water just as quick as you can so that you can start the production of the goblet cells and the mucin and the mucus and get a good coating of the mucus on the intestinal tract and ward off these possible problems with the pathogenic bacteria. So I think I'll leave this at that. If I get other developments over the time, we'll talk about those as well.
Okay, that sounds great. No worries. We're up at 1:30, and we got to do the riddle. And why don't you explain a little bit about that for us?
Okay, the club that I am affiliated with here, where I live, is the De Marver Poultry Fanciers out of Harrington, Delaware, and they hold a show there every April. And this project was my idea. To help the club raise a few dollars for their coffers. All of this started for me several years ago when my good friend Shelby Harrington was alive, and they had a poultry show up there, and I went up, set up my stuff, and I was talking to him outside, and I mean it was packed with birds, and they had a good show. They had a couple thousand birds maybe, and which was a big show for them, and things were going along pretty good, and you know, I don't know nothing about shows. All I know is set up my stuff and go. So I said to him, I said, boy, I see you guys can make a killing this weekend. So he kind of looked at me like I had three heads. And he said, you think so? And I said, yeah. I said, you got a lot of people here, a lot of birds. And then he proceeded to tell me that they would do well if they broke even, and if they made money, they, you know, would be even better. And I was kind of appalled by that because, I mean, it's a, you know, anybody that's been involved in putting a show together and then putting up putting up all of the cages and putting up with everybody's nonsense about, you know, the judges stink and you know this and that and the other thing, you know how it goes. And so I said to him, I said, well, I tell you what, I said you know, you and I are friends. I said, but you got to be one of the dumbest people I know. I said, to do all this work for nothing. I said, you got to love it. And that's how it started. I was made an honorary member here about a year or so ago, and it was my idea to we go half on an incubator together and at my cost, and we would sell chances on it to you know, see how much money we could raise for the club. So that's how this all came about, and I bought a bunch of tickets in addition to the fact that I'm you know, helping them out with the overall cost of the thing. So the way it's going to work is whoever gets the riddle right today, we'll get six tickets that will be dropped into the bin in April of 2014. You do not need to be present to win this. This is a 1502 GQF incubator. So it's a nice piece of equipment. Doesn't cost you all a dime. All you got to do is get the right answer, and then all I need from that person is name, address, telephone number in the form of an email. And I will send them the stubs to the tickets, and I will put the opposite piece in the bin, and that's pretty simple. So that's how it all came about, and that's why we're doing it, and it's for, you know, for good cause, for good people.
That sounds pretty awesome. And so basically what you're going to do, folks, is Peter's going to read the riddle, and then you're going to give us a call, and we'll just say take caller number 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. Again, your chance to win this awesome sportsman incubator from GQF. One more time, 347-637-3237. I'll try to post that in the chat room if my computer will allow me to do that with this crazy keyboard. And
now, I will say, Andy, that I the answer was given during my dissertation here today. So.
I heard it, yep.
It's there. So if you were paying attention, that's like,
maybe.
That's like one of my teachers used to say, pay attention, there's going to be a quiz. So.
And then stomp his foot on the ground. Hello. You'll see this later. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, if someone will post in the chat room, since my keyboard's screwing up and this cursor always goes back at the beginning, it'll take me 10 minutes. If you can, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. And we're ready to hear the riddle, Doc.
Okay. It's pretty simple, I think. Of course, I write them, so I already know the answer. But this one is relatively short, but I think it gets cuts right to the chase, and if they were paying attention, shouldn't be a big deal, and I'll explain it afterward either way, okay? Okay, here we go. It says, I am blind, and I cannot see, and sometimes diseases get the best of me. E.T., don't call home. There is no room in this pouch for you to call your home. I ferment what the rest can't do, and my gift to you is some god-awful dew. There you got it. So, figure it out.
And we did hear the answer when you said it. I was like, aha!
I won't tell you when, but I said it.
And it wasn't too long ago in the show, actually, to be
no,
honest.
No, it was not. No, it was not.
Definitely was not too long. So this is six tickets with your name on it. We'll go into the pot. For
yep.
the drawing next spring for your chance to win
yep.
This awesome cabinet sportsman incubator from GQF, one of the sponsors of the show. And holy cow, what a man. Can you imagine that? The thing's what do those run? About $800?
Yeah, right in there.
Yeah.
Plus the shipping. This will be shipped in the lower 48 free to anybody. That's why they don't need to be there to get it. All they need to do is win. They'll be notified by email and or telephone.
Yep.
And it'll be shipped directly to them. Okay. No cost at all.
That can be a dangerous gift for some people.
Yep. And we're going to do this more than once because I bought 10 books of tickets. So we've got 10 opportunities over the course of between now and April to do this. And we may do it once a month or so, whatever it works out to. I don't care. I think it's good for everybody. So it's a. No takers?
Well, let me get over here to the chat room and see. I was going to try one more time, 347-637-3237. We said caller number 3, so let's head over here to the phone lines. And, yeah, we've got a few takers over here, so let's go to 3. And if 3 doesn't know, we'll go to 4.
Okay.
And so on. So let's see. Caller number 3. Let me push the right button here. From area code 270, you're on the air. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please.
Is Critter Lover from Paducah?
Critter Lover from Paducah, Kentucky, right?
That's correct.
Hey, Critter Lover.
Hi. Well,
hey. What do you think?
If I heard the question correctly, my phone is skipping in and out. I believe you're talking about the cecal pouches.
Yep, you got it. Right on the money.
Cool.
Yeah. Woohoo!
Yep, that's it. I would have accepted cecal tonsils, cecal pouch, or blind pouches. Any one of those three would have been common terms that were used for the cecal pouches. So in the first line, I'm blind and I can't see. That lends itself to the blind pouches. Now the ET, don't call home. ET stands for one of the diseases that resides there. It's a species of coccidia. and ET stands for Emeria tenella. Most species of coccidia like a particular portion of the intestine, so the Emeria tenella likes that, so that's where I come up with the ET. And obviously, it is a pouch. It's blind. And fermentation takes place there. That's how it breaks down the more coarse particles that the rest of the intestine are not able to break down. And if you've ever smelled one, you'll know it is a god-awful do. So my hat's off to you. You were paying attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, before you go, let's just eliminate the middleman, which would be me. Critter Lover, we'll just have you email Peter Brown your information. That he'll tell you what he needs, and that is a chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. That'll just eliminate me having to forward it on. Chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. And, Doc, what information do you need from her again?
Name, address, telephone number. That's it.
Name, address, and telephone number. There you go, Critter Lover. So if you'll get that over to the Doc, he'll fill out those the ticket book and put that in the in the drawing for your chance to win. How cool is that? Easy as pie.
Yep. We appreciate it. Yep.
All right. Very, very good. Perfect. Hey, man, thanks for joining us today. What a great topic. I'm sure we'll get lots of listens of the archive as well. We'll post again later this evening about, if they missed it, how they can listen to the archive on Blog Talk or iTunes or everywhere else. And it looks like we'll be around next Monday, the 20th, for another show of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. So, Peter, as always, thank you very much for joining us today. Hope you have a fabulous week, and thanks for coming on every Monday and sharing your vast knowledge about our backyard poultry.
My pleasure. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty, folks, another great episode is wrapping up here. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Again, one more time, great week this week. Today, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Tomorrow, American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Thursday, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, and No Show Friday. So how cool is that? We hope you can be able to tune in all week this week right here on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hey, have a great day, everybody. God bless. Ha 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 ha